Show as Planet Chaos turns and turns, there's one guy that does not stop spitting out the truth no matter how much it hurts. He is the best of the best. Thank you for joining me, Tom Luongo.
Thank you, Mel. That's probably overstating the case, but you know, hey, I don't get a lot of praise in my life, so I'll take what I can get.
Well, I'll tell you what, you work pretty hard as far as I'm concerned. And you have been, this is the truth, you have been predicting for about 3 years so many things that came to pass well before they happened. So we are in a crazy time. Lots of lying out there, lots of manipulation. You and I both know there's plenty of fake news, but there's plenty of financial fake news as well. And we're dealing with chaos. So let's have a 40,000 foot view from you to kind of put some things in perspective.
Well, I hate to do this, but if you're a fan of Jeremy Clarkson and Top Gear, you know the phrase, this is my smug face. Okay. And I hate to do that, but I can't help it because because I've been working all morning as I prep this month's Gold Goats and Guns newsletter. Right. And I'm going through the portfolio and I'm watching the news. And I just got done on Twitter, like trying to remind everybody. I think myself and Daniel DiMartino Booth are the only ones just saying, look, the Fed did exactly what you should have expected them to do.
Right.
Booth has been saying for months, and she agreed with me when I had her on my podcast and agreed, you know, in other areas that, look, everybody's screaming that Jerome Powell has made a policy mistake by raising interest rates as fast as he has, doesn't understand that policy mistake was a planned demolition, and that Silicon Valley Bank is just one of those potential, or you know, one of those the fallout from that, right? Like,
right.
Well, I don't know what's going to fall first, but we clearly know that we know why Powell's doing what he's doing. And so once you dig into, you know, the way SVB was holding its assets, and it was very clear that it was by far the most vulnerable of the banks. Now, Booth brought up in an interview that I recommend everybody watch. She gave an interview with Blockworks on Monday.
Okay.
And I learned a lot. So that's why I'm going to pay it forward here, where they went into all the reasons why SVB was so vulnerable. And then when you add, so they get some like guts of the situation. But when you back it out, it's very clear to me that the Fed and their allies took out SVB. Timing is everything in this life. There are a number of things that are happening all at the same time. And clearly with the rollout of FedNow, which is the Fed's wholesale central bank digital currency, which you and I've discussed in the past, nobody should be afraid of. This is just the natural evolution of payment systems, interbank and central bank payment systems. It's a good thing for all of us. It makes the domestic dollar payment layer cheaper and faster and more reliable than the current system. And at the end of the day, it's going to make everything, and that's the right thing to do. And, you know, if you're a Bitcoiner, you're sitting there crying in your beard this morning because you thought Lightning Network was going to take over the world because everybody else was behind the curve. But you had to realize, guys, like you put pressure on the existing system and you force it to create a new product to compete with you. That's the nature of business. That's the nature of the world. Innovation sparks counter-innovation, which sparks counter-innovation, which sparks counter-innovation. Well, all of my arguments about the Fed, Davos, and all of this stuff is all just that. Davos pushes for the end of commercial banking and for unlimited bailouts and unlimited, not bailout, but no bailout, but defaulting on old political promises. We see this today as Emmanuel Macron in France is literally executive ordering the pension reform in France, which was well predicted by everybody in this space who had three brain cells to rub together that eventually they would have to default on the promises of socialism. Right. And they did it in France. And Macron was put in power to try to do this. Okay. The French people are going and they don't have any other options. They are moving forward with their script in Europe, which is that they're insolvent, they can't pay, and they want to move eventually very quickly in this situation towards a default on their promises and eventually the default on their debt. Remember, George Soros has told us what the game plan is for Europe, which is the payments, the promises are unpayable. We're going to default on the debt, issue perpetual debt, and move to a digital euro and pay you back in digital euros. Well, you're not going to get paid back. They've confiscated your capital. You're never going to get your principal back. You're just going to get a permanent bond payment at, I don't know, 1%, 2%, whatever it is that they're going to agree to. If it's Europe we're talking about here, it's going to be 0.25%. Because these people are unrepentant communists and they don't believe that anybody should get paid, get their capital back.
Right.
So Macron is doing that in France. Joe Biden is moving towards like executive orders on gun control here in the United States, which are just, why else would he be doing that? But because he's expecting some form of political unrest,
right,
or, you know, another summer, and he's just engendering another summer of violence.
Right.
Right. Okay, fine. So how does the Fed respond to any of this? So these are all responses to something that they do not have control over. So everybody is conflating. And I was thinking about this the other day when I was on with, I was on another show the other day. I think it was on Palisades Gold Radio when I made this insight the other day when I was on with Tom. I said, look, if you think about what Davos has done, they have gotten control of the political arms of these countries. So they've gotten control of parliaments and heads of state. And they've tried to use that to leverage then control over the monetary system. Now, in Europe, they have control over the monetary system because they have the ECB, which effectively has already subordinated all the national central banks. And eventually, they're going to roll it all up to the ECB. But here in the United States and places like Japan, which we'll get into in a minute,
great,
no, they don't have control over the monetary system. They do have control over the political system, but they don't have control over the monetary system. And you can't take over a country without both.
Right. Yes.
If you don't have from the top down, you cannot control a country if you don't have both control of its political system and control of its monetary system. Because but with those two things, then you can control the legal system, the tax policy, the fiscal policy, and everything else. They clearly don't have control over the Fed. Who bitched hardest at the Fed's quote unquote bailout the other day, which everybody's out there screaming is a bailout. Like even Jim Rickards is calling this a bailout. He knows better than this. Who's screaming about it? Europe. Europe is screaming the most about this. Absolutely. The Financial Times comes out and screams the Fed's incompetence. But no, this was not the Fed's incompetence. This was the Fed is Lucy with the football. And you idiots thought that you were going to roll all of us over, that we were going to be Charlie Brown and you were going to be Lucy. But no, the Fed is ultimately Lucy with the football. And everything else is just the fallout from that and managing the fallout from this. There was no way the Fed was going to do this and not create problems. They were going to break something. That's fine.
Right.
The system is broken, so we now have to break parts of the system in order to build a new one. And everybody is like running around like a chicken with their head cut off, screaming about, like, oh, the Fed broke something. Well, yeah, you've all been complaining that the world sucks. Well, then how do you move forward if you don't break down the sucky world and rebuild it with a new world, right? Like, so now ask yourself the question. And if you go into the terms of the bank term funding program that they put in place, it's very, very clear what they did and what has happened since then. I'm going to give you two simple examples.
Okay.
Ready? Okay. Now, reloaded. Go back to 2008 when Bear Stearns collapsed.
Right.
Right? When Bear Stearns collapsed in 2008, and Lehman Brothers subsequently collapsed, who was on the hook? Who was failing? The big banks were failing. The JP Morgans, the Bank of Americas, right? They were failing. They were the problem. So what happened? This was the when I saw this happen last Friday. So we did this, all of this happened a week ago Friday. And it, around this, where it's 1 o'clock now, at around 1 o'clock last Friday, the FDIC shuttered and took control over Silicon Valley Bank. And I went, well, that's not right. They usually wait till 5:30. They usually wait until the markets are closed to minimize the effect on the markets and then minimize the panic. But here, the Biden administration, the Davos-controlled vandals at the Biden administration, closed Silicon Valley Bank at 1 o'clock in the afternoon as a countermove to the Fed blowing up Silicon Valley Bank.
Wow. Yeah.
That is the only thing that makes any sense. And the Friday morning, I was as confused as everybody else. I wasn't sure what was going on. But once I saw the FDIC closed it, I'm like, oh, okay, I think I'm right about this. I think it's the Fed closed another crypto euro dollar faucet, like they closed FTX on election night. So now, when Bear Stearns blew up in 2008, the big banks were in trouble. The FDIC dithered and the Obama administration dithered for weeks while the big banks, while the small banks were getting crushed under the uncertainty. Right. No liquidity, their assets were drying up. And everybody kept saying, I remember going through this, going, everybody's sitting there going, but we're fine. The small banks were going, our balance sheets are in good shape. There's nothing wrong. What's going on here? But what happened? The big banks needed the good assets on the small banks' balance sheets in order to fill the holes in their balance sheets created by the collapse of Lehman Brothers and previously Bear Stearns. And that's what we got. And the regulatory uncertainty kept creating more and more uncertainty, and that's what allowed Wall Street to eventually roll up all these small banks, take their good assets, throw the bad assets into bad banks and sell them off into the world. Then Bernanke eventually comes in, backstops the whole thing after all the bad assets are bought up at 5 cents on the dollar by vulture capitalists like Paul Singer and Warren Buffett and all the rest of them.
Right.
They then get the big bailout and all those assets go back from 5 cents on the dollar to 40 cents on the dollar. They all make a friggin' fortune in a killing and we all get screwed. Right. And then we sit here for the next 15 years with them at the zero bound. The exact opposite is what's happened this week. Look at what happened on Monday. They immediately respond with a stop the bank runs. They insure FDIC deposits in the banks that were shuttered. They cut a deal with the Biden administration to, okay, we'll make all the depositors whole, even though they don't deserve to be made whole. But these are all highly politically connected people. These are Gavin Newsom's and...
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi's and all of these people, right? Okay, fine. What is it going to cost us to make you people go away? Oh, $20 billion? Fine. Here's $20 billion. Shut up. We get to kill the bank. We get to kill the source of your leverage. We get to kill. It's like this. We're complaining about the bailout when that's the water that they stole in big buckets. And yeah, we didn't claim the buckets back. The Fed got the faucet. Shut the faucet off, knocked off the stopcock, and then filled the whole arrangement valve with lead.
Right.
Never coming back. It's another spigot of leveraged, recycled offshore dollars coming back into the United States to fund NGOs, summers of violence, politically connected AG campaigns, buying elections, vote fraud, all of this stuff. Migrant trains, fentanyl trade, the whole nine yards. Everything that you can think of that the Democrats have been doing,
right?
A lot of it flowed through Silicon Valley Bank. A lot of it flowed through FTX. Now, there are other faucets out there we haven't gotten yet, but they got three of them last week. And if you think that you're going to do that and there being no cost, you're just terminally naive. If you're going to stand here on your moral high ground and scream moral hazard, like, shut up, get the ambulance and go home. Like, this is the real world. Everybody's putting on their big boy pants and we're trying to stop the commies from destroying us all. Is it worth $20 billion and you're rolling your sleeves up for a couple of months? Yes. Moreover, let's take it one step further.
Right.
This happened immediately. It didn't wait 2 weeks. We didn't get this rollout of the Fed already knew what they wanted to do. They could have waited 5 days and JP Morgan and Citigroup and everybody else could have been out there sucking up all these small banks. No, what did they do? They actually put money into First Republic Bank, who didn't deserve to be taken out. because First Republic Bank was a counter move by Davos to try and spark contagion fears through the rest of the U.S. banking system. Yeah. So they put the kibosh on that and they pump money into it. And yeah, Zero Hedge is out there going, oh, they just used the money that they that ran out of these other banks and they just put it back in. Yeah. So what, dude? First Republic Bank has been saved. As of this morning, Silicon Valley Bank, and look what happened. Silicon Valley Bank, and who is it? I was reading this morning, Martin Armstrong in a private blog post.
I read this morning too, yeah.
Said, there's no buyers. In this market, there are not going to be any shotgun weddings. There's not going to be the Fed forcing JP Morgan to buy Bear Stearns for a dollar. There's nobody out there. The Fed, the Treasury Department, which Yellen tried to broker last weekend, tried to broker for days somebody to buy SVB. Why? To funnel it all, to sweep it all under the rug, to keep anybody right. going, to keep everybody, all of their profligacy from getting out into the world, from them going to discovery, to use a Robert Barnes term.
Yeah.
Right.
True. Yeah.
Now, what happened this morning, Mel? It's Friday morning. What happened? This morning, there are no buyers for SVB. Sorry, I'm going to answer my own question here. This is easy. And they file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Yeah. And this morning, Bloomberg and Reuters and everybody's out there. And even there are plenty of buyers for First Republic Bank.
Right.
So while First Republic Bank's balance sheet is impaired because of all of this, there are at least buyers out there that want to buy it, keep it alive, and keep the businesses that it serves and the customers that it serves solvent. So tale of two banks. Wall Street helped and bailed out First Republic and let the woke bank. Well, yeah, you fill in whatever disgusting metaphor you want that, you know, you saw last night on Pornhub. Like that's just what happened. And that is different. The regional banks are in this. And then if you look at the money flow for the Bank Term Funding Program, the big banks are going to have to, through increased FDIC payments, if there's any losses, the big banks are going to have to pay the small banks off.
Wow. Totally it's the opposite of 2008. Yes, that's the total opposite. Right. You know, another thing, because Rob had a bank that was too small to save at the time, and that happened to them. So, you know, I know that that's really what happened. But the other thing that happened then, too, was they put in all these regulations for the smaller banks and stuff back then. And none of them did anything to stop this happening. So obviously, do you think they're going to come in with all these regulations again? Or you think it's the opposite plan?
No, I don't think so. I think what the Fed has put in place is a shoring up of the regional banking model of the United States.
Yeah.
Now, there are still things that they're going to have to do to completely save it. I spoke with no less than four of my patrons who are all regional bankers.
Right. Okay, cool.
On Monday. And they all said the same thing. Monday morning we woke up. And we were wondering whether or not we were going to get like destroyed and gobbled up by JP Morgan. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we had seen net capital inflow.
Yeah.
So all the regional banks, and you know, they were small banks. You know, one guy said to me, we saw $40 million flow in. It's right. Not a lot of money, but it's something. And in a small bank, that's maybe the difference between, you know, surviving and not surviving. The point is that they read the term sheet and came to the right conclusion. And the other thing this actually sets up, because by backstopping their old treasury portfolios at par, which, you know, they bought, you know, and they're all underwater by 20 or 30%. Remember, I was thinking about this a couple of weeks ago. This is another thing to bring into this. I said to my patrons one day, and I think you probably heard me, I was like, why is my credit union still only paying me 0.15% on my savings account?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
It's at 4.5.
Right.
Why aren't I getting paid? Well, the reason is because they're sitting on all of these treasuries on their balance sheet to offset deposits, but all those treasuries are underwater. So they're scooping up the coupon to try and fill the holes in their balance sheet. The Fed just indemnified that. Now they're free to start offering savings rates. Now they're free to start refilling their balance. The holes in their balance sheets have been made whole, to put it. Difference between H-O-L-E and W-H-O-L-E.
Right, I got it.
Right, just make sure that, you know, people, hey, look, you know, in this world, you can't.
We don't know. I know.
Hell, right. Like, at this point, I know you can, but you know, the people listening, like, you know, they're sorry, but you know,
yeah, I know.
I've seen people tweet. I'm like,
no, so, I know. Well, thank God, because the tweeting has been utter like chaos. And there's people that have like a million followers that were putting things out that were so irresponsible. I kept thinking, oh, my God, stop. There are a lot of people out there that are easily manipulated and fooled. And it's really, that's why I'm so glad, because we booked this before this happened. And I was like, oh, my God, perfect timing for Tom to come on and actually break it down. Now, here's the other thing. So what's happening in France with the pensions and all of that? Mm-hmm. Is America in danger of something similar with the pensions and all of that, or no?
The way the Fed is going. The Fed is moving like bit by bit and block by block into place to build its foundation of a new financial system, or a new banking model that's going to look a lot like the pre-FDR banking model, I think. And in the interim, what they'll do is we'll deal with the unfunded liabilities of Social Security and Medicare. Look, guess who's the biggest beneficiary of this new program?
Oh, I would think the government.
Pension funds here in the United States.
Well, let's hope so. I mean,
because now it allows the Fed to continue raising interest rates. Like, everybody's out there screaming that QT is over, interest rate rises are over. No, the Fed's going to continue QT. They're going to continue to raise rates. They'll probably raise rates slower. We probably won't get to my 7% terminal rate. I'll have to, you know, eat a little crow on Twitter with a bunch of morons.
It's okay.
But, you know, whatever. They're morons. And so, you know, they prove that to themselves every day. And, you know, it's like, it's great. Twitter's a, you know, if it's nothing else, it's a mirror. You know, the pension funds here in the United States will now be able to go and get yield out of the banking system. They'll just be able to put their money into, you know, short-term, you know, they'll be able to put their money into reasonably term, will have a reasonable term sheet in order to get yield. Look at what happened with the 210 spread this week. It biblically moved 50 basis points back from 100 basis point inversion back into the 40s and the 50s. Now, is it going to go back to 100? No, it's going to continue. We're going to get yield curve normalization. It may happen at a lower level than we had last week, and it may still be below the Fed funds rate, but that will work itself out. Okay. And as long as the Fed keeps signaling, yes, we're going to continue to raise rates. Yes, there's recession fears on the horizon. Yes, rates need to rise. Like, rates need to rise, and lending needs to stop, and leverage needs to stop. But in the interim, there's going to be a whole lot of chaos as old positions are blown up.
Well, what's insane is with everything that happened during the COVID and the money and the PPP loans and this and that. Now, the billions of dollars of it is fraud, as we knew. But at the end of the day, that anyone thought that there wasn't going to be some kind of boomerang backlash and we were going to have to at some point pay for it. It's just the magical thinking that got us here. Now, my question for you is, are we so there's two factions. I keep saying like the war, there's multiple wars going on, but one of the wars is a giant geopolitical financial war. So there's two factions in this war. A lot of people have been pointing at the Bank of England, you know, the City of London bankers, those guys as the Davos banking entity. And then people seem unclear, but you know, some people call it white hats. I don't know what that is, but at this point, I don't
gray
know
hats,
what that
I
means.
Like.
Specifically, but when you see the two factions, who is the Darth Vader manipulator here in the big picture? Do we actually, is there a specific?
I don't know that there's one of them. I like to just use the term Davos,
right?
And understand that Davos itself is a cartel is beginning to break down, because it used to include the New York banks, it used to include the Fed. It does not any longer. Right. It's clear that that Switzerland they're attacking Switzerland through Credit Suisse.
Right.
And the Swiss have abrogated their neutrality. And I've had Pascal Nicciotti on my podcast, and to get him the exposure he needs to try and explain this to the world, why this is so important.
Yeah.
Part of what's happening to Credit Suisse is because of the Swiss abrogating their neutrality. And this is a pressure point that can be used. I don't know that Credit Suisse isn't. I don't know that the Fed's not wanting to backstop Credit Suisse. I think they are, but this is that's conjecture, and it's a theory on my part. It's not, it's a hypothesis. And And the reason I think that is because the Swiss National Bank is the largest U.S. equity hedge fund in the world. And Credit Suisse is then, by extension, the prime monetary system transmission provider for the Swiss National Bank. And if that means there's trillions of dollars of U.S. equities sitting on the SMB's balance sheet and there's no liquidity provider, that means there's no liquidity in U.S. equities.
Right.
And if there's no liquidity in U.S. equities, then capital flight out of Europe can't happen. The money has to stay in Europe. So did you think that maybe someone is trying to take out Credit Suisse? Maybe there's a Darth Vader or an Emperor Palpatine out there trying to take out Credit Suisse, which is why I think the Swiss National Bank will always get bailed out by the Fed. We'll sit and or to a lesser extent Wall Street and even by some of the global South. Why the Saudi Arabians and the UAE came in to buy their make major investments in their investment bank spinoff in order to get Credit Suisse some money. Why there was a bailout by the SNB of Credit Suisse yesterday. Why the attacks continue is because if Credit Suisse doesn't, I think, if Credit Suisse doesn't fail completely, if Davos runs out of money to attack Credit Suisse before we run out of money effectively to save Credit Suisse, then Credit Suisse survives and Davos collapses that much faster. So you're going to see them do everything imaginable to kill Credit Suisse.
Right.
Everything, I think. If I'm right, if I'm wrong, then it's just, then we'll not see any of that. And eventually, you know, because I just read a report that it was on Zero Hedge. Now, Zero Hedge, I think, has lost the plot on this completely. I think they're so up their own. The Fed has to pivot because they need to be right because they've staked their intellectual reputation on this. That, but you know, they did put out that, and JP Morgan and certain members of JP Morgan's analytics staff keeps putting out things like the Fed's going to have to put $2 trillion into the economy. Well, you do realize that JP Morgan is not a monolithic organization, and there are plenty of Davos trolls that work at JP Morgan.
Exactly.
But that being said, a lot of the American banks pulled their money out of Credit Suisse in recent weeks. Now, are they going to put that money back in once, you know, once the did they pull it out in order to safe haven it? Did they pull it out to try and destroy Credit Suisse? It's a good question. It's an open question. And I bring this stuff up not because I need to be right about it or even want to be right about it. It's because here's some food for thought. Anybody who has better information about what's going on at Credit Suisse and wants to pipe up, hey, put it into the zeitgeist. We need it. You know where my Twitter feed is. You know where you can find me. I'm open to all of this stuff. But my spidey sense tells me that Credit Suisse is a very important linchpin to this.
Well, we have to understand that, again, like I'm saying, people have to understand we're in war, not just literally, but in every way. And the biggest war, I believe, from all of this, going back to centuries, is the money.
The formation of the Bank of England.
Yeah. It's just the bottom line. And if they have to crack this whole thing, that's why a lot of people that are like, well, it's taking so long or whatever, you know, it's like we're talking about a thousand years of corruption and chaos and manipulation. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen how anyone thinks, which is why your perspective is really good, because I am seeing people walk in lockstep. Yesterday, the big tweet, I didn't get back my Twitter, but I lurk around anyway. And I saw a lot of tweets saying that Joe Biden and his friends had nationalized banking in America with people panicking.
Jim Rickards put that out in an article. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, that's not what happened here. Like, this is when I questioned people like him and Chris Whalen. Like, they both like went off the freaking deep end on this because they can't. I know Jim knows the friggin' geopolitical score on this. Like, I know that.
So what's your answer to they nationalized the banks?
They didn't. if anything, the Fed got control over them. It's not an unlimited FDIC bailout. You have to, if you're going to backstop if you're going to have a banking system, right? That's this kind of fractional reserve banking system. There comes a point where you're going to use FDIC as the means by which to backstop that banking system. This is how FDR stopped the itch from my nose. I don't know where it came from. I'm not a Coke fiend. Okay. I can't stand it when this happens. Like, oh my God, the pollen in the air and here in Florida.
I know. Well, look at where you are. There's this.
So, but that's how FDR backstopped and ended the Great Depression. Gary North is dead. So I have to carry on his legacy. Like, Friedman was wrong. Bernanke believing Friedman was also wrong. What stopped the bank runs in 1933 was FDIC, or 1936 was FDIC.
Right.
Once people knew that it was okay to put their money back in banks and it wouldn't be confiscated, that, you know, some of that money would be guaranteed, that's what brought confidence back into the system. That's the same thing that happened in 2008. And yes, it's the same thing as happening here, but this is very limited. The FDIC didn't just sort around, all right, yep, it's unlimited. Is it the camel's nose under the tent? Possibly. But here's another thing to think about. Does anybody really believe that any of these vandals are still going to be in power a year from now?
I don't.
A year and a half from now?
I don't. So
no, I think everything that's happened so far, I don't think, like, watching the way this has played out, yeah. I'm telling you, I'm now more confident than 2022 that 2024's election will not be stolen.
I am too. I'm 100% too. And there's multiple reasons for that. But one of them is this. And that people, look, when we were talking about this, when I first started talking to you a couple of years ago, people didn't even know that there was a geopolitical situation. They didn't know that there was a Davos. They didn't know. And still people like fight it. But as things start to hit home, you know, this financial thing, but there's so many things. Because let's talk about other things that you've talked about for a long time. A lot's coming out, not just about COVID and the origins and all of that, but it's also coming out how manipulated we were. And I think there's enough people on this planet that resent the idea that we were manipulated at all, especially by our own government and intelligence agencies. So everything is falling apart. It's funny. I would never watch the current Oscars, and the movie that won is unwatchable to me, but everything everywhere.
I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, you did? Everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I really do.
We can do a whole movie show on it, but... But I just think
it was the right movie at the right time to tell us a story about how to get your family back. But
okay,
that's what
okay.
that movie's about.
Okay, I see that. Well, I have to take a look at it again. But I will tell you that you see things like it quick and you think, what is this about? But you're probably right. But I have to, because you're very good at that. But what I do have to say is that the title seemed very fitting because it won the Oscar the same weekend. I was thinking everything is happening at once. In Disclosure too. So in my head, I was like, wait, what? And that's pretty ironic.
Yeah. If you really think about the story of Everything Everywhere All at Once, it really is a mother and a father through two completely different perspectives trying to save their nihilistic daughter. And it's the father in that story that teaches the mother that violence is not the path to reintegrating the family. It's the quiet, honesty and diplomacy that eventually wins. I watched a really great YouTube video on Wayman. I don't agree with all of it, but when I watched that movie the second time, I realized that he's the hero of the story.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch. But look, for me, all movies these days, I have to watch at least twice if I like them at all, because there's just so much. I'm programmed already to look at a movie and be like, what are you trying to do to me?
And you and I went over this. And by the way, for those of you who don't remember, Mel and I did a really wonderful podcast on my podcast about this.
It was awesome.
A few weeks ago. And I'm sure we'll do another one later.
Yeah, I'll put a link.
I happen to think that actually was, I mean, there's some things about that movie that I can see it can be taken the wrong way, but I think at its core, and I don't even think that that view of Wayman is completely correct, because but it's close to right, and right. I think it's a fair thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you're a screenwriter, which I am, how you broke it down just to the basic, this is what happened, this was the premise, this was the hero, this is the outcome. That's how you should break down anything. And, you know, what's so crazy is that's kind of where we are on a bigger picture level. What you just said is kind of, we have this nihilistic daughter, somewhat, the system that we're in that is dying. and it's killing everyone with it. And
this nihilistic bagel that is sucking all the vitality out of the universe.
Right.
It's sucking all hope out of the universe.
Yeah.
And it's a giant, and you know, and it's a mother who's, you know, and Michelle Yeoh's character, the movie's really quite a very simple story about how to put a broken family back together within the context of, you know, Chinese cultural and familial imperatives. Like that's the thing that people have to like to get past. I mean, and I even look at like the daughter being a lesbian as not woke, as that's like the ultimate refutation for the grandfather. It's the ultimate
China.
You know, smack in the face. What could you make? What could Evelyn have possibly done worse than running away from her family and repudiating her family in China? Have one child, it be a daughter. And that daughter turned out to be a lesbian. Like that, if you're a screenwriter, you're like, okay, how do we stack the deck against Evelyn in every way, right? Yeah. So purely from
I'm glad you're saying this. This is why I like talking movies with you too, because I have to be honest, I felt like it was another movie trying to beat you over the head with wokeism, and maybe I'm going to go back, but that's really really important to say that because it is all the cultures are being manipulated right now, mm-hmm. and we have to remember that there's beauty in the traditions and culture, but there's also a lot going on that you can't really. You have to evolve, and that's where we are.
You know, that movie is about, you know, that movie ultimately is about putting a family back together within the context of Chinese cultural imperatives.
Yeah.
And to an American audience, it can, especially at this moment in time, that layer of it can easily be lost.
Right. I think that's an excellent point. That's very good to say. I'm glad you said that because that makes me want to go back and probably other people. And what even on a bigger picture right now. So we're dealing with a lot of fear mongering. Listen, I don't believe anything that's coming out of our media. I'm sure you don't either.
No,
a lot of fear mongering.
I have a new phrase for you. You're going to love this one.
Okay.
I have a new phrase for you. You're going to love this. Ready?
Good, go ahead.
Distrust, but verify.
Exactly. Distrust. But
this is the way to not be. What I mean by that is distrust everything they tell you, but don't be blackpilled.
Right.
Verify that they're wrong. Verify that they're lying to you, but be open to the idea that maybe in this particular instance, they're not. Because a lot of people are just reflexively distrusting and then stopping.
Right. Well, that's interesting. That was my observation on a lot of the fact checkers, that the fact checkers immediately tell you it's wrong. But then if you read how they're fact checking, they're picking one piece here and there. So I keep saying to people, if it's fact checked, read the fact checked and figure out what they don't want you to know and look it up yourself. Because, you know, but that's where we are. We have to go back to critical thinking. You talk about it a lot. Being skeptical is a good thing. And just following in lockstep or blindly is obviously to our own demise. But I do see a lot happening with a desperation of the Davos crew, of the narrative is falling apart, all of that, which does put us in a little bit of a perilous time. I don't know if you saw I thought it was one of the worst displays I've ever seen of our government when they were questioning Matt Taibbi and Schellenberger on the floor. I just sat there thinking, what have we devolved into? And I can't stand that Goldman guy is bringing up all this stuff out of nowhere. They're acting like he's some kind of hero. He's a Levi Strauss heir that was born in the swamp. But like he was nicer than the other people. They were treating these two lifelong liberal writers as the enemy. Instead of wanting to get to the truth. And I think anyone that saw that was sitting there like, what are they doing? Like, this is not, doesn't benefit we the people at all. It was a cage match between two parties that I don't think even exist.
Well, in the case of lifelong Democrats that got off of the wagon train, they always reserve their most vile vitriol for the heretics, for the former members. They hate us, but they hate them more.
Isn't that
because
great?
The ones that expect them to go after Naomi Wolf like you wouldn't believe. Whereas whereas the right is like, no, welcome to the new valley of the real. Welcome. We know it was difficult, and I cautioned everybody. Like last week, I even defended her publicly, and I said, read her Apologia. that she wrote on her Substack. And then people came back and go, oh, goddamn time and blah, blah, blah. Shut up. She got there.
Right.
It's a process. It's hard. One day you're going to have to go through that process because you're wrong about an awful lot of stuff.
Right. You know, it's funny. I saw that the usual takedown artists of The Guardian and Atlantic and Politico went after just this week to tearing apart Russell Brand, Naomi Wolf, both Beebe and Schellenberger. Greenwald gets attacked endlessly. And it's like, well, if they did change, why isn't the first thing like, why? What did they see that we didn't see? And it's obviously the operatives because it's always the same people, but they keep outing themselves over and over. Takedown of Russell Brand I read was so ridiculous. This guy's, he's lucky to be alive. When I knew him back in the Hollywood days, he was a disaster, you know? Right. And it was like, and he really straightened himself and his life out. And he got, you know, even he did an interview and he's like, I don't care what people think of me. They don't know where I've been, what I've done, who I am. I'm here for a reason because this is how I evolved in my thinking. And I have the right to say whatever I want. But that's another thing. And you're good at this. But a lot of people have to stop apologizing or trying to meet people halfway that aren't interested in meeting you halfway. I mean,
no, they're enough. Not. Yeah. No, I really do respect where Russell Brand has gone.
Me too.
I never gave him a second thought until he started that YouTube channel. And he's just like going nuts. And I'm like, dude, killing it. And I'm like, cool. Like, you know, and it doesn't even matter. You know, it's like, look, one of my best friends in this industry is Garland Nixon. And Garland and I don't agree about a lot of things, but we agree on one thing. We agree that the truth matters more than anything else.
Right.
And we agree that keeping an open mind about all of this stuff is important. And, you know, every once in a while I get a DM from Garland. He's like, God, I hate to say it, but you were right about that too. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, no worries, Garland. It's okay. We'll, you know, and this is why. And, you know, and then it just keeps, you know, you just keep the conversation open. You just keep the and it's fine. Everybody's allowed to have a different perspective. No, not everybody needs to listen to me. Tom's right about everything. No, I'm not wrong about like most things in my life.
Well, the good thing is when you are wrong, you say it. You do a whole show about it.
I'll do an entire show about how I was wrong.
Like, right. You know, which is also a lesson.
Because the point is, well, one, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I learned a long time ago personally about myself that I don't learn by reading. I don't learn by ingesting. I learn by doing. I'm a kinetic learner, meaning I have to go, well, hey, let's try this. Oh shit, that was bad. That was a mistake.
Right.
Oops. You know, and it's really funny because, you know, it's a constant source of tension between myself and my partner, Dexter White, because he's not that way. He's a completely different type of personality. And so he looks at me, he says, stop being a retard. You don't understand. I've evolved that into saying I learn by failure.
Oh yeah, me too.
The only way I'm going to learn anything is I have to go and do it and then see that it didn't work. And it doesn't, and I try to do that. This is why game night's so very important to me, because I then go, oh, let's play this game. And then let's try that. Well, that didn't work. Oh, this is going to be a miserable 2 hours. And then I sit there and laugh at myself for 2 hours while I get curb stomped, but it's a low consequence environment to get that idea out of my system.
Yeah.
And then I can, you know.
Well, that's why, but also you do that. And I do that myself with games and stuff, because you have to shut off too. Your brain needs to shift gears a lot. People are, you know, so many people weren't involved, engaged at all in anything until it started to affect them. And then I say to people, like, I had on Ed Dowd, he's doing a lot of good work out there, but you know what he said?
Yes.
He said, people are being red-pilled so fast. And he's saying, red-pilling people or people waking up too fast also leads a lot to anger. And we really have to be on top of the people that are talking need to realize anger is going to come from that. And we need to be the ones to kind of diffuse it.
Your Absolutely. Thoughts on that? I remember writing, I don't know that you or I were in each other's orbit back then, but back during the Trump administration, I said, the one thing we don't, and I published I wound up publishing these editorials that were originally for the newsletter on my blog with some secondary attribution when the movie Dune came out.
Right.
And I said, the one thing we do not want in all of this is if we start winning to become the Fremen.
Right.
Because if you watch the Fremen were put down for 10,000 years, and then their anger was so complete that when they finally won, they swept across the galaxy and killed hundreds of billions of people.
Right.
This is why Paul Atreides, the end of Paul Atreides' story in Children of Dune is so very important, even if the books themselves aren't as well written as the original. Like, right. You have to read all three of the original Dune trilogy to get Paul's complete story to understand. You can't just leave it at the end where, at the end of the first phase of the heroic cycle, where the man grows up, becomes the hero, leads their people to revolution. It's like the end of Star Wars. Star Wars gets, the original trilogy gets to end as a fairy tale, but we all know that the fairy tale doesn't end there. Now they got to rebuild the world. And, this is why I don't mind the sequel trilogy. As a matter of fact, I actually defend them, because it was an honest attempt to put into context the world that Luke, Leia, and Han would have built, and how unstable it would have been, because they were the wrong people to build that world, because they tried to rebuild the old world. And what did they get? A mess.
And yet, right? Another analogy for where we are. The Republic
back, and it never worked. And, so the stories never end. And this gets back into the whole idea that stories are never finished. They don't end.
Right.
They just keep evolving. And so the right people were there at the right moment in time to overthrow the empire, but that does not necessarily mean that they were the right people to build the new thing that comes after the empire. And I think the honest inquisition into that was absolutely the foundation for the sequel trilogy. And then, you can argue about the execution, and that's fine. To argue about the execution of the three movies is fine, but there's no argument about why they did it.
Right.
And even though no one wanted to hear that, and so many people who are criticized it wanted to immediately abreact and say, oh, it's just Disney trying to destroy our heroes. Well, maybe some people within Disney wanted to destroy your heroes. And maybe the artists who were actually working on this were honestly taking the story in the heroic sense to its next level, to the next iteration of where we go from there. Right. It's not enough.
Right.
Right. Even Achilles' story ends tragically. Even, all the heroic cycles end this way. So, and, that's just reality. And we have to be willing to grow up in our thinking about where we are in each moment in this process, in this story. And this is part of the reason why I like to take that 10,000 foot view. It's also part of the reason why I keep engaged with the popular culture, even if the popular culture itself is corrupted. Yes. Because you can find the moments where the popular culture and the artists within that culture are still trying to work. They're trying to work this stuff out.
Yeah, for sure.
They don't even know. Maybe many of them may not be, doctrinaire commies, whatever. They may just be, have bad code and bad imprinting.
Right.
And,
I think a lot of them, what you're talking about too, a lot of them never looked beyond the bubble that they're in. Once you get into that bubble where you're making movies and you're doing this and you're a writer, and it's hard to get out of that bubble even for 10 minutes if you're on a certain level. It's constant, nonstop. And then you wonder, I wondered recently, a good friend of mine who's a big director got warned by his agent in the last few weeks that if he didn't stop putting out stuff about COVID, which he's been doing for 3 years now, it would be really hard for him to get more jobs. And we're thinking, three and a half years in, they're still saying that? What is going on? Why do they not get it? I just think that they don't look, they're in a bubble, and that's, but there are people breaking out.
The same thing
out.
In D.C. The bubble in D.C. is just as powerful.
Exactly. It's the same. It's the same.
The same bubble.
Yeah.
Which is why the neocons think that they can, blackmail the world into nuclear war.
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't even get into that. We'll get into that next time. But I do want to ask you two things before I let you go, since you've been so nice to stay so long. First thing is your newsletter and awesome website, Gold, Goats, and Guns. Let's talk about gold. Still, what do you feel? Gold manipulated? What's going on with gold now that...
I know, gold is doing exactly what it should do in this environment. People are moving towards tangible assets.
Right.
Right. And this is part of the reason why the stock market is holding up. It's part of the reason why... And in the first wave of this, it's going to be people moving into treasuries, because treasuries have now been backstopped by the Fed as a safe haven asset.
Right.
So this is the part that everybody's missing. The Fed just backstopped U.S. treasuries as a safe haven asset. You know who's complaining about this? Europe. Why? Because they didn't want the U.S. bond to be a safe haven asset.
Nice.
They were actively trying to destroy it.
Right. Well, that's important to know. And then the last thing, guns. I'm seeing executive orders to skip the Constitution, go right for our guns. Like you said, I think that they are nervous that that some of the things they have planned upcoming will have mass chaos. Your thoughts on the executive orders trying to skip?
I think Obama is still the best gun salesman that this country has ever had.
Exactly. I saw this month again that the gun sales were off the rails.
Right. I'm just waiting for Smith and Wesson to get off the schneid.
I don't blame you. But the truth is, we're in perilous times. People have to be very careful and very smart, but stay peaceful. I really still believe, like you do, that, you know, everything's going to work itself out the way it does. There'll be tough times ahead. But, you know, anything that we can do to keep people on track, I think is really important.
And on that note, just to close, go back to Everything Everywhere All at Once. That is what Wayman is telling you. Revolutions don't happen through confronting them with the violence. They come by putting down your guns and finding a way to empathize with your enemy.
There you go.
And the climax of that movie and how Evelyn is able to eventually reach her daughter is by going through all of the foot soldiers of her foot soldiers by giving them that what they need. And it's funny and it's crazy and it's over the top. But when you break it down in pure story beat, Bob McKee, value are we dealing with here on the scene card?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
That's what we're talking about, dude. And when this is so why it's so very important. I can't, you know, people ask me all the time, Tom, what book should I read to learn this or to learn this or to learn that? And I'm like, and I never answer them. I really need to do so. Read Bob McKee's story.
I was just going to say, since you brought it up, I took it a couple times and I love him and I know him. But one thing is so funny. Now I want to go back and read the screenplay I think I'm going to read the screenplay before I watch it again, because
that's a fabulous idea, Mel. That's a fabulous idea.
Because, you know, absolutely, the positive and negative in every one and the chart,
right,
because how it grows.
Yeah, I mean, you and I could do an entire podcast on just explaining Robert McKee.
Oh, it's best. We should do that.
I read McKee 50. I haven't read McKee in 15 years, but I read it back in 2005, 2006 when I was contracted to write a screenplay.
Yeah. Every time I write a screenplay, I pull out mine's highlighted with notes. I pull it out and I just can go. I can just go to like the one place where I'm stuck. And within like 20 minutes, I'm back on track.
You're back on track. Exactly.
Yeah, we should do that. Exactly. Also, it's a hero's journey. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that book that's really, really way bigger than having anything.
There's that one. And then there's the Christopher Vogler book about the hero's journey, which I think is also, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but the Vogler book, McKee, ignore Sidfield. That's not necessary.
I know.
That's not necessary. It's that stuff. And then, you know, just sit down and start watching movies again.
Exactly.
And watch them with that idea in your head. And you will see how the best screenplays work and when the best screenplays don't work.
Yeah.
And then you can also see where the screenwriter tried, but where the screenwriter had it all there, but the director and the acting or the dialogue failed, right?
Yeah. No better map than a screenplay to me. Thank you so much, sir, as always. And we'll do that again soon. We'll keep our movie series going as well. Thank you so much. I'm going to put links below to everywhere you can find Tom. Tom, where's your best place right now?
Just, you know, let's start with my Twitter feed. You can go to Patreon.com/GoldGhostsAndGuns. Sign up. Even if you sign up at the $4 level, you get most of everything. But, you know, I also I try to put every media appearance I do on my Patreon feed as a public post. So if you just search on, you know, go to my Patreon feed, search media, and you'll get all the posts that have that that are tagged that. And if you're, you know, and just if you don't like the swearing, just, you know, ignore the ones where I say don't, you know, keep lock the kids up, because, you know.
Hey, I like you just the way you are. Thank you so much for coming. I'll see you again soon. Thanks.
You too, Mel. Have a great week, my love.
Hey, it's Andrew Sorcini at Beverly Hills Precious Metals. I'm here at the Mel K Show. Last year, we helped so many patriots out there protect themselves against inflation with gold and silver. In 2023, we can show you how to preserve what you have, avoid further loss, and position you for greater things for your investments. So the best way for us to help you is for you to go to melkgold.com, fill out the online form, and put in as much information about yourself as you possibly can. The more information, the more we can help you. So do it right away. The time is crucial as we head into central bank digital currencies. We can show you how to protect your 401k or your IRA, and the costs are minimal.
Hello, Patriot Pals. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about our amazing partner, Mel K Superfoods. A lot of people do the food prep programs that they come in, you know, freeze-dried and all of that. This is not that. This is a full serving of fruits and vegetables and protein. It is a way to maintain a healthy diet no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, no matter what happens in this country. Because again, it's very affordable, and at the same time, it's very easy to follow, and it is like having a full garden outside your house that you're going and picking fresh fruit and fresh vegetables every single day. You have that same nutrients inside your cupboard. You know, prepare now, be ready. A lot of people do prepping stuff. This is an excellent way to prep to make sure that you and your family always have the essential nutrients that you need to live a healthy, full life out there. Please check out Mel K Superfoods. We're loving the program. We'd love for you to join us. Please get in touch with the show if you're having benefits from the Superfoods program at Mel K Superfoods. We'd love to hear from you. Go to MelKSuperfoods.com and join me in supercharging our wellness journey and living our best, healthiest lives ahead.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and my employees and I want to thank each and every one of you for your continued support. With everything going on right now, your rest is so important. That's why we're having the biggest MyPillow sale ever. Not only are my bed pillows as low as $19.98, but you can get the best body pillows ever. Regular $89.98, now only $29.98. Take your rest on the go with our Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for only $14.98. And we have our new couch and accent pillows. They aren't just for looks. They have MyPillow's patented adjustable fill that gives you that amazing MyPillow comfort. In this economy, you get the best gifts ever for the best prices ever. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you get deep discounts on body, couch, bolster pillows, and so much more, including my original bed pillows for as low as $19.98. Please order now while quantities last.